Welcome to Cluvius Incarne, an autobiographical novel based on my life from age 3 to age 5, beginning just prior to my third birthday in 1958 and continuing to just before going to elementary school in the fall of 1960. This is Chapter 20, Spring. In this chapter, my mom, dad, and I experience that magical first day of spring that feels so different after a long winter. I am drawn to the backyard and that special spruce tree and somehow summon Molly to join me for a very close encounter of a different sort than we're used to. When I woke up this morning, I knew something was different. It felt different. David was standing in his crib looking out the window across the room from my bed. The sun was coming in that window and shined on him. I couldn't remember the last day when there was sunshine and not just clouds. I looked out the other window by my bed that looked into the backyard, and the grass where the sun hit it looked extra green, like it was glowing. I heard birds chirping outside. I got out of my bed and ran out of the room in my pajamas into the living room. The front door was open and just the screen door was still closed. All the windows in the living room were open and I felt a little cool breeze on my skin and the air smelled like flowers. Mom was in the doorway to the kitchen. "It's gorgeous out there," she said. "Feels like spring, finally." She opened her eyes wide and her mouth made a half smile. I ran toward the screen door and pushed it open and ran out into the front yard. The grass felt slippery on my bare feet, and the feeling in the air made those little bumps all over my arms. It was still kind of cold, but it felt like the sun was making things warmer. The air smelled sweet like flowers and made the inside of my body tingle with energy. The chirping birds were loud. Since my bare feet felt cold, I ran back into the living room, the screen door banging closed behind me. Dad was coming out of the hallway into the living room with David in front of him, holding his hand so he could try to walk. I could tell that David wanted to walk by himself like I could, but his legs didn't move quite right yet. He lifted them up too far. I heard Mom's voice from the kitchen. "So Eisenhower signed the bill making Hawaii the 50th state. Republicans got their new state to match the Democrats' Alaska. How about that? Two new states in 1 year." Dad blew air out of his nose. "I read that the flag industry has already made 300,000 flags with 49 states that are now no good," he said. "They're saying it's going to put them out of business." He shook his head. "It's something to consider when you design a flag that has to be changed every time you add a state." "True," said Mom. Then, "What's your schedule today, Eric?" Let's see, said Dad, still walking David around the living room, which was still pretty empty except for that one brown chair with the wood poles and that Herman Miller chest with the shiny white top and yellow drawers. "I've got midterms to grade for Wilson's class, and now that my outline is approved, I need to do some more research at the Grad Library, and I'd like to start in on the first draft of Chapter 1. I need to get to Fingerlee's for bricks and boards for shelves for all Coop's new toys and my books." "You're going to finally get that last box of old books out of the attic?" Mom asked. "Yeah, some classics," he said. "Plus all those armed services editions I got during the war." "Those ugly ducklings," she said from the kitchen. "Why did they make them that way?" "They made them cheap, Liz," he said, still walking David around the mostly empty living room. "Cheap paper and binding on the short side, plus two columns for easy reading, and small so they could fit in your pocket." Then a big smile on his face, like he thought of something he really liked. "Hey, it's not the presentation, it's the prose that counts." You don't know how many nights I was cooped up in a tent in southern Germany reading those things. I can't even imagine, said Mom. Dad really liked books, just like I really liked toys. He would read them, but also look at the outside part. He would even smell them sometimes. Whenever he got a new one, he would tell Mom and then figure out what shelf to put it on in his office part of the basement. I had shelves for my toys, and he had shelves for his books. I liked books, too, because they mostly had stories. I liked the stories about people having adventures, about kids having adventures. They gave me ideas for my own adventures that I would make with my toys. Mom would read me books that had big words and pictures on every page. I liked those because if she sat next to me, I could see the words she was reading and try to figure those words out myself. And I knew a lot of them already. Those books were written for some people called children that grown-ups were always talking about. But I liked them too. Dad would read me regular books that had a lot more words on each page and only a few pictures. Or maybe no pictures, just more words. I liked the pictures, but I usually could imagine my own pictures too. Oh, and I need to put in some hours at the frat house, Dad said. Are you still giving that woman who runs it writing lessons? Mom asked from the kitchen. The one you bartered with for the TV? Still walking David around the living room, Dad looked up at the ceiling, thinking. Well, he said, every once in a while she'll ask me to read something and critique it. She's really a very talented writer. I enjoy doing it. Well, I gave you a hard time about it, I recall, Mom said, like it would interfere with other work you had to do. But I must say I'm enjoying the TV when I'm doing chores down in the basement, and Cooley likes it too. I did like it. I liked Yogi Bear and Jinx the Cat. I liked Captain Kangaroo and really liked when he showed Tom Terrific. I liked when they showed the real rockets taking off. Mom and I had watched one take off the other day. And I liked watching Sky King with Molly because she really liked that show. And it was fun sitting next to her when she really liked something because she would smile whenever she looked at me. I also liked those times when they wanted you to get things, those commercials. Molly's mom said they were the worst thing about TV. She called it the boob tube. But I was really interested in them. I figured those commercials were the stuff that grown-ups thought were really important to tell you. They did things like yell at you and sing songs to make sure you were watching. I was always worried about what grown-ups were up to, so I figured I needed to know what they thought was important. They were always going and getting things from the store, from the library, and other places. So the people on TV told grown-ups to do that stuff. They even had kids telling grown-ups to do stuff, which I thought was really interesting. That reminded me of how Ricky talked to grown-ups, like they didn't know more than he did. I figured if I watched those commercials, I would know everything the grown-ups were talking about, though I figured I also had to learn to read so I could figure out the other stuff they knew that they weren't talking about, but they put in books. Then there was that radio thing, which I think grown-ups used to watch before they put that top part on that showed you the pictures, and they called it TV instead. But now people didn't watch the radio, they only listened to it, which meant you didn't have to look at it, but you still could figure out what they were saying. Those voices on the radio always wanted to tell you about a baseball game or a football game. I guess that was kind of an adventure, too, because in a game, you never knew how it was going to end, which team was going to win. The people on the radio also told you what to get at the store, sometimes, like the people on TV, except you couldn't watch them do it. Then there was singing and music on the radio, too. They usually happened at the same time, but sometimes there was just the music part and no singing. music was done with instruments like that piano thing at Grandma and Grandpa's house that Grandma and Aunt Pat used. It was interesting that grown-ups played with their instruments like kids played with our toys. It was also interesting that on the radio, when people did singing, there was always music, too. But Dad and I did singing, but there was no music. Mom had brought the radio up from the basement and had it playing in the kitchen while she did stuff there. Both windows were open. There was somebody singing on the radio. Mom said it was Frank Sinatra, whoever that was. Like I should know who that was. Spring is here. Why doesn't my heart go dancing? Spring is here. Why isn't the waltz entrancing? No desire, no ambition leads me. Maybe it's because nobody needs me. Mom liked that Frank Sinatra guy. Big bands, too. She said that was the music she grew up with, though I couldn't believe she or Dad was ever a kid like me. Mom even showed me pictures in a photo album of a kid and said that that was her when she was my age. But I didn't think it really could be. It was all gray without any other colors. When she listened to music she liked, she would start moving around like she was dancing. And when she saw me, would say, "I just can't stop my feet," and then laugh. She liked listening to singing, but she didn't like to sing because she said she couldn't carry a tune. Dad liked to sing a lot, but he didn't listen to much singing on the radio. He listened to sports like baseball and football. Both of them would listen to news or watch it on TV. I remember Mom and I watching the news when that big new rocket took off. I ran through each room of the house and every window was open, all 9 of them. Then I ran down the stairs into the basement. I had learned how to move my feet really fast down the stairs so that it was almost like falling instead of walking. When I did it, I would hold my hands out so my fingers brushed against the wall on either side. Somehow that made it easier for me to go really fast. Even the windows in the basement, those 5 little ones up by the ceiling, were open a little bit. I would run back up the stairs too, sometimes stepping up not to the next step, but the one above it. When I got to the top of the stairs, I looked out the side door, which was open except for the screen door part. The little stones in the driveway were shining in the sun, which was right up there in the blue sky above the house next door. Even though I was looking outside, I could tell Mom was looking at me. "If you get your shoes, I'll help you put them on so you can go outside," she said. I didn't like that I still couldn't tie my shoes by myself, and I had to ask Mom or Dad to do it for me. If I could just figure out how to do that, then I could do just about everything by myself. I ran out of the kitchen and almost ran into Dad, still helping David walk around the living room, and had to run around them to get to my room. I could see David turning his head to watch me as I ran by. I could tell that he wanted to run like I did. I grabbed my shoes from the floor of my room without even stopping and ran back to the kitchen, David watching me run by again. When Mom saw me carrying my shoes, she leaned over and patted the seat of one of the chairs in the kitchen. I knew that's what you did when you wanted someone to sit there, so you didn't have to talk. So I sat there and gave her my shoes. I could feel myself breathing more than I usually did. She took another chair and moved it in front of me and sat and looked at my shoes and then at me. "I know you need me to tie them, but can you put them on by yourself?" she asked. I looked at my shoes in her hand and nodded. She held one out and I took it, pulled up the part under the laces, stuck my toes in the open part, and pushed my foot in while I pulled on the top of the sides until my foot slid in. "I see you know how to put it on and which foot it goes on," she said. I nodded again, still looking down and not at her, since I didn't want her to see that I didn't like that I couldn't tie them myself. She held out the other shoe, and I took it and did the same thing. She looked at the shoes now on my feet, but not tied, shook her head, and waved her finger in the air. "Somebody needs to figure out how to make shoes that have a strap with a snap instead of laces so a kid your age can do it himself," she said. "They could make a mint." I watched how her fingers moved one lace around the other, then pulled on each so they squeezed the top part of my foot. Then making a loop with one lace and wrapping the other lace around it, finally pushing that lace through the bottom part to pull out the second loop. I had tried to do that myself, and I could do the first part, moving one lace over the other, but making the one loop and pushing the other loop through just seemed too hard. When she finished, she said, "There you go, young man." And I tumbled myself off the chair and out the side door into the backyard. The air still felt cool on my skin, but it didn't feel too cold. And with shoes on my feet, they were warm enough, and that was usually the part of me that got the coldest. But the sun was up there in the sky with no clouds in front of it, so I could feel it making my body warm and feeling alive. Things tingled and tickled inside me, and I thought of those moving gears inside the clock that you usually didn't see. I decided to check out all the different parts of our backyard to get ready to do more playing outside, since it wasn't really cold anymore. Between the window into my room by my bed and the big maple tree was where the pile of dirt was, where I would play the most with my soldiers and ships. The green grass was around it and went all the way back to Mom's garden at the end of the backyard, all now glowing in the sun. All that grass was usually the sea where the ships would go carrying the soldiers to or from the island or land part that was the dirt pile. Looking back towards Mom's garden, the left side of the yard had one of the two spruce trees, the one Molly and I were hiding in when Mom got scared that we were gone and then had to go to the hospital to get David. The right side of the yard had the other spruce tree, which had more branches so it was harder to hide in. On the other side of each tree was where our neighbors would go in their backyards. Those spruce trees were a lot taller than me, but not as tall as the maple tree above me right now. They were green all year, so Mom said that's why they were called evergreens, which made sense. She said that they stayed green because they had needles instead of leaves, so even when it got cold, they wouldn't fall off like the leaves on the maple tree. I looked up through the branches of the maple tree. They looked like long fingers of a giant hand, of an arm coming out of the ground, reaching up to the sky. Yesterday, Mom had pointed at the little bump parts on the small branches that she called buds, because she was always telling me about plants. I remembered when there were leaves on all of those branches, and then when they turned colors and fell off. Mom said that was the fall, which also made sense. And I remembered Mom saying they would come back in the spring. Today I could feel them getting ready to come back somehow. I looked at where my dirt pile had been under the tree. The ground was all flat and hard. My little shovel could barely break through it. But Dad said that as soon as it was spring, we would go and get more dirt. But I was drawn toward the spruce tree. It just seemed extra alive somehow. As I got closer to it, I could smell something sweet, which got stronger as I got closer to it. I got on my hands and knees and pushed through the branches into that space inside the tree where Molly and I had hid when my mom got so worried. But it wouldn't be hiding, I thought, if you said where you were. And then Mom had to go to the hospital because David had to be born. That was the word grown-ups used. Inside the secret space, the sweet smell was much stronger, but it also had a stingy feeling in my nose. I remembered that smell from the Christmas tree at Grandma and Grandpa's house, but this was much stronger. It was so strong now, it was hard for me to think about anything else when I was smelling it. I grabbed branches so I could stand up inside the tree, moving a bit to avoid branches above me. They felt rough and sticky on my hands as I grabbed them. I figured they were close enough together that I could climb up them like I was in some kind of secret tower. I climbed up, weaving my way between branches which brushed against my clothes, my bare arms, and my bare legs. I got up high enough that I could poke my head through the needles of the smaller branches and look out. From where I was, I could look down on the backyard, Mom's garden at the very back, and my now flat dirt pile at the front, just behind the maple tree. And if I looked through the maple tree and over the top part of our house, I could see the windows of Molly's bedroom and the top part of her house across the street. I couldn't really see in her windows, and I wondered if she was looking out at me right now, so I waved at her window, thinking maybe she was. I put my foot on the next branch up to go higher, but it felt like it was bending, so I didn't keep trying to step on it. I looked out at the maple tree, which was much bigger than the spruce tree I was climbing in. If I could just figure out how to climb the maple tree, I could get much higher. But it didn't have any branches close to the ground that I could start climbing on. When I was under it, if I jumped up, I could barely touch the lowest branch. I had to be bigger, taller, as the grown-ups called it. Grown-ups were always looking at kids they hadn't seen for a while and saying how tall and how grown-up they were. I realized that that word grown-up was really two words, grow, which was the thing you were doing, and up, which was the way you were doing it. And then they said grown instead of grow because it had already happened. I had to grow up before I could climb the maple tree, and I had to get older so I could tie my own shoes. Then I could do just about everything by myself. I could already put my clothes on except for my shoes, go to the bathroom by myself, and eat a bowl of cereal by myself. And I think I could even make a peanut butter sandwich by myself, though I hadn't really tried yet. "Hey, Coob!" I heard Molly's voice call out as her feet crunched on the little stones in our driveway, and I watched her from above run into the backyard. She was looking up at me and smiling. "I saw you waving at me from my room," she said. "How the heck did you get up there?" I hadn't heard her say "the heck" before, but I had heard her dad and my dad say it sometimes. It did make her sound kind of like a grown-up, like something Ricky might say. She was 4 now. "I climbed up," I said. "I'm climbing up too," she said, running up to the tree but then stopping, looking like she couldn't figure out how to climb up it. "Did you climb up on the outside?" she asked. I shook my head. "Inside." She nodded like that made sense. "Go into the secret part," I said, "then climb up the branches." She let her body fall to the ground on her hands and knees. When grown-ups got down on their hands and knees, they would do it slowly, one part at a time. But Molly loved to just throw herself on the ground or get knocked down when we were playing bodies, for real or for pretend. She would even crash into things sometimes on purpose. I liked all that stuff too, but she really liked it. She crawled between the branches into that secret part, Then I could see and feel the trees shaking, and I could hear her grunting under me as she got closer to where I was, and I could feel her energy. Her head was there below me, and to get as high as I was, she had to duck under a branch, which pushed her chest against mine. Her face is just a few inches apart, and I could feel her breathing on my face. She held her body back, just enough so we weren't mashed together, and then looked at me in a funny way like she'd never seen me before, or like I was not the same, or I looked different this close to her. When we played or walked or watched TV together, we usually sat or stood next to each other, looking in the same direction, seeing the same things. Not facing each other like this, where I saw her but she couldn't see what I saw. And she saw me, but I couldn't see what she saw, which was me. When I could see what she was seeing, it helped me know what she was thinking, and I could think the same thing if I wanted to. But this face-to-face was strange and kind of scary, but exciting, too. And other times when we were side by side, our shoulders or our legs might touch, but not the front parts of our body, like just now, though it didn't really bother me. I mean, some grown-ups did that hugging and kissing stuff. I'd seen Mom and Dad do it, and Molly said her mom and dad did it, too. I'd seen grown-ups do that holding hands stuff also, mostly on TV. Ricky said that some kids did that holding hands stuff, too, when they got all kissy-faced. But Molly and I never held hands, because we knew if we did, then everything would be different. If the grown-ups saw us, or even other kids saw us, then everybody would always be watching and talking about us. And even if we did it when no one could see us, like in that secret place in this tree down below or up in her bedroom, it would still somehow make everything different. Molly looked at me for a long time, up real close, before she said anything, like she had to figure me out in some new way. I didn't really like people looking at me because I wasn't sure what they were thinking about me. But when she finally smiled and it looked like she was really happy and not worried about me, then I was happy too. And it was okay if she looked some more. And I looked at her too, because I guess that was what we were doing. I mean, we always liked doing stuff together, and I guess we were doing this together, just not seeing the same thing when we looked. Her eyes were blue, and her hair came down to the bottom part of her head, and was that color that grown-ups called blonde. I had heard grown-up men at a party talking about someone who was a blonde, like that was something special and different than a regular woman, and maybe funnier, too. There were pink parts on the side of Molly's face that would even get more pink sometimes when she looked fierce. Her lips would push together a lot when she was thinking, or she would even stick the top part of her thumb between them when she was worried, though she didn't do that much anymore. I wish she could see what I was seeing, so we could maybe think the same thing about it. But how could she? And she was looking at me, I guess, how I looked at myself in the mirror, with my darker eyes that Mom said were hazel, whatever that was, and my darker hair that was really short, like other boys and grown-up men had, that Mom said was a Princeton, whatever that was. I decided I better smile so she would not get worried about what I was thinking when I was looking at her, since she couldn't look at herself at the same time. "Coop, I can't wait until you have your birthday soon and you are 4 like I am," she said, then getting fierce. "I don't like that we're not the same number." It felt strange for her to be so close and look right at me, talking in that fierce way. I nodded. Grown-ups were always talking about how old kids were, like that was most important somehow. And once you were 4 instead of 3, you would do different things. They really talked about it a lot when they talked about kids in school, which I was finding out was not something just grown-ups did, because Danny and Ricky said they went to school too. I don't know that really matters, I said. She pushed her lips together, thinking, then finally nodded, but still looking fierce. But instead of looking at me, she looked down at the backyard. I looked too, so now we were looking at the same thing. And I don't like what Ricky said at my party about those new bombs, she said. Dad said they're good because no one will fight wars anymore. Mom got mad at him because she said he's wrong. She glared at me. You wouldn't fight wars with those new bombs. I shook my head. That seemed to make her less fierce. It's stupid, she said, starting to smile and shake her head and getting even less fierce, like she was done thinking about it. We both stood there for a long time without talking anymore, each on our branch in the tree, but just inches from each other, feeling the energy of the day, feeling the energy of each other. It felt like all sorts of things were starting and might never stop. It was scary, but also exciting. This spruce tree was one of our secret places where we could go to be safe from the grown-ups. That part down below was where we could hide and no one could see us. And now there was this part up here where we could go up high and look down on things. And we could see our other special place, Molly's bedroom, not quite so secret, across the street, where we could go and fight the battles against pirates and the other grown-up bad guys and not get blown up unless we wanted to. That concludes the 20th chapter of Clubius Incarnate. Thank you for listening, and stay tuned for the next chapter, my fourth birthday party. Relieved it's not a rainy day, we celebrate my fourth birthday in Almendinger Park. Some of my mom's behavior towards me is beginning to push my buttons, but I have a great day pretending with Molly and the other kids at my party as we journey to the moon and later Mars, where we must be friendly with ugly Martians to protect the Earth from invasion. Molly has another fall off the merry-go-round, but we managed to keep it under wraps.